Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the AfriCast. My name's Clinton. I'm hosting today because I got a new microphone. We're going to test it out a bit. That's why we're getting this little bit of me rambling in the beginning. Our resident audio engineer, Brendan, says the sound much better than it used to sound, and he's also here. Hello, Brendan.
Hey.
And also joining us, of course, is Robin. Hey, Robin.
How's it? Yeah, still on our old setup,
You guys still alive? It's been a harsh week. I think it would be an appropriate explanation of it. You're still alive?
Yeah. Yes, alive is a good way to describe it.
Haven't frozen yet.
Not yet.
I came close a few times, but I'm still here, thankfully. We're going to get into the news before we discuss our main topic this week, which is the games coming out in the remainder of 2021, which is actually looking a bit packed. But let's start off with Robin. He's going to tell us about high school.
Yeah, so UCT hosted a online media briefing this week, and they kind of teased an announcement that was going to be a major educational milestone. And obviously, while these kind of institutions like to make things sound a bit more grandiose than they really are, it is a rather interesting concept. So they are launching the UCT Online High School. And it's kind of part of UCT's Vision for 2030 initiative. People might remember from the previous decade that a lot of companies and organizations had like Vision 2020, and now UCT have Vision 2030, which is around trying to open up education and access to education to a wider audience, or just make it more freely available to a lot more South Africans. So as far as online high school goes, they're opening up for applications at the moment, and their first intake of students will be in January 2022. We don't know all the details yet. What we do know is that it'll be using the South African CAPS curriculum as far as teaching goes. We're assuming that because it is being handled by UCT, that there will be university accreditation for matriculants down the line. That said, they will only be taking in matric students from 2023. So this kind of first year, which will be 2022, will kind of be grade 8 to 11, and then matric will be offered from 2023 onwards. And yeah, so they unpacked a few of the kind of elements. One of the things they talked about is that this is potentially one of the most affordable private school options in the country. We don't know that's actually the case, but they are saying that the online high school will be fully supported, starting from 2,095 rand per month.
What?
None of us have kids. Yeah, none of us have kids that we know about. So we're not too sure whether or not that is a good price.
For but a private school, you're usually expecting to pay more than 10 times that. Again, like Robin said, we don't have children, but I do have a niece and a nephew, are both in private school. And my God, is it expensive. It is shockingly expensive.
Yeah, I've also been through the private school, program. And yeah, my parents definitely forked out a lot of money for that. So again, it's from 2,095 Rand. We don't know how that balloons moving forward. But it looks like a potentially interesting concept. We also have to consider things like hardware for students, connectivity, which is a huge issue. We saw that during the pandemic. The kind of digital divide was really highlighted as far as education goes. But I think it's just an interesting concept. We've seen that distance learning is fairly popular. Despite all of its issues, UNISA is still one of the more popular options in South Africa. Whether or not a kind of model like this works on a high school level remains to be seen, but I think it's a very interesting concept, and it will be really intriguing to see if other tertiary institutions start offering online high schools moving forward if this is successful. So I guess the real proof will be around this time next year, when that kind of first cohort of students will kind of be able to give us feedback as far as what their experiences have been like. And yeah, so like I said, the online high school, we have a story, and there's a link to the portal for the school. You can find out more information. You can potentially apply as well. And yeah, it is an interesting concept, and I think education in South Africa does need a rethink, and this may be one of the elements that's part of it.
Interesting, because there's so many small things that you wouldn't think of, like how do they do PE? Because as far as I know, you do need not credits, but you need to do something with PE to get your high school equivalent in South Africa. So, you know, how are they going to do that? Do you have to record yourself running around the house and then send it to them? What are they going to do for that? And then there's other questions like how many kids will be in a class, and you could have more compared to real life because you don't need to physically be there. There's a lot of tiny questions that I guess will be answered as kids go. And it's going to be a bit of an experiment with these children's futures to send them to this. I know a lot of people, when they open a new school, they say, oh, I would never send my child to a new school because you don't know what it's like yet. And this one, not only is it a new school, but it's a new kind of school. So good luck to everyone involved, because I do think there's some potential there.
Yeah, I share the same sentiment. I think 2,095 Rand per month for high school education is pretty good. Obviously, it's not as good as free or no-fee schools. I'm keen to see where this goes, especially after the last year with lots of learning moving online. I'm really curious about this, and if it's successful, I do hope that we see more initiatives like this, where even if you stay in, like, I don't know, the Northern Cape, you get access to a high quality schools education because they've gone online. I mean, this is cool. Well done, University of Cape Town. Really well done.
Good luck to everyone involved, and it's one of those things, again, we'll need to wait and see how it goes. But on to our next piece of news, which is me. Good old South African boy, Neil Blomkamp. Is that how you pronounce his surname?
Yeah, Blomkamp.
I always hear it pronounced by Americans. Yeah. Anyway, good old Neil. Just call him Neil. Everyone knows him for directing District 9. And then less people know him for directing Elysium. And then even less people want to acknowledge him for directing Chappie. And I actually want to get into something funny about that at the end. But first, the real news is that he's joined a new game development studio called Gunzilla Games. And they are working on a project that doesn't have a name now. It doesn't even have any concept art or a trailer to go along with it. All we know is that it's a AAA shooter that has a multiplayer focus. And Mr. Neil, his position is, it's one of those la-di-da positions, Chief Visionary Officer, CVO. Now, you can check out the story. They give a lot of spin about what that entails and what he'll be doing, but it's really interesting that he's made this jump, even though anyone who's been following him knows that he has been involved in games already. 2 years ago in 2019, he had a studio called Oat Studios, which made a live-action short film that was a trailer for Anthem. Now, Anthem died, but I don't think that has anything to do with that. Neil was also involved in Halo. He did a lot of little featurettes for Halo, and I think it's rather infamously that he was attached to a full-length Halo movie that never got made. So it's not like he's a stranger to video games and he's coming out of left field. This kind of makes sense if you look at his career so far. But it'll be interesting to see how much time he's going to be putting into this game. If, when the game is revealed, we'll be able to see his visual style. Because I think all the work that he's done so far shares a style that you can pick up rather fast. And like I mentioned, Oat Studios, we've covered it on the site multiple times. They have lots of short films available for free on YouTube. And whenever you watch one, you can see, okay, it's him. It's obviously him. And then also on top of that, will he keep working in movies? And this is the other thing I wanted to mention, is that he has a movie coming out this year called Demonic. Rather plain sounding name, just Demonic. And actually, just today, just before we started the podcast, they released a full-length trailer.
Oh, wow.
And what's interesting about that, and the reason I brought it up at the top, is that at the beginning of that trailer, it says, from the director of District 9 and Elysium. It doesn't even mention Chappie. I think that's it's such a slap in the face. Because also, Chappie was the last one to come out. So they definitely had those two titles there by quality and not by release date or anything like that. So once again, it feels like we end a lot of this segment in, we'll need to wait and see. But we'll need to wait and see, when will Gunzilla reveal this? When will it be available? Will it really be AAA? We have no idea right now. Like I said, the studio is new. Even though it has a lot of game development pedigree from the people who work there. And again, you can read our story. The people involved have worked on Assassin's Creed, The Division, Far Cry, Warface, Crysis, Gears of War, Star Citizen, Hunt Showdown. So these are obviously talented people, and they've got, it's quite strange, they've got three different offices in three different countries around the world. So you'd think that a studio would start small, but they're just going big right out of the gate. So hopefully good things come of this. You know, it's nice to see South African talent out there and doing stuff. We'll need to see what happens. Did you guys watch Chappie?
I think I caught glimpses of it when it was on, like, DSTV, but I didn't go to the cinema to go watch it. Despite Hugh Jackman being in it, I couldn't bring myself to watch it.
Hugh Jackman wears, like, what's the nickname for the short sleeve button shirt and then
Mark May Stanley Kemp.
If that is it, it's the uniform of the Fault, I think some people call it, and like boots. And it's hilarious to see him in a South African suit. Anyway, it was a bad movie, and I don't think Elysium's that good either. Did you see Chappie, Brendan?
No, I've avoided it since it came out. I didn't want to give Die Antwoord a view.
God, Die Antwoord. It's, man, District 9 was so good. I don't know what happened. But anyway, we're going to move on to the last little bit of news this week. Brendan, you're going to talk about work from home and while we shouldn't get attached, maybe.
Yeah, so this week, Worldwide Works, together with Cisco, Dell, Sycan, and Intel, released a research report called The Digital Corporation in South Africa 2021. And essentially what they did is they interviewed, or surveyed rather, 400 of South Africa's top decision makers, or high-level decision makers at South African enterprises. Not the top decision makers, because that would include like the president and stuff. But these were folks that work in businesses in South Africa. So the decision makers represent corporations with employee numbers ranging from 51 to 200, and they classify that as a small business, as well as corporations with more than 200 employees, which is a larger business. I wrote two stories based on that report, but I want to highlight one that's probably more pertinent to most people, and that is working from home. So they asked folks what proportion of staff they expected to return to the office, and unsurprisingly, 2/3 of respondents said that they expect all staff to come back. This is obviously after the pandemic is under control, whatever that phrase means these days. So essentially, it seems like folks want people to come back. Well, 1/3 of respondents said that they don't expect all staff to return. I think we should be looking at the higher side of things. And this kind of makes sense to a degree. And the reason I say that is because working from home is kind of difficult. And there are many folks that are averse to remote work, especially when it comes to managers and that sort of thing. I found a really interesting interview with somebody named Judith Olson, who is a distance work expert and a professor at the University of California, Irvine. And one of the reasons that she said that folks are hesitant to work from home is something called the attribution error. It's something in psychology where if you're in an office and you see that somebody isn't there, you kind of think that, oh, something must have come up, they had to go to a meeting or something like that. Whereas if somebody isn't available when they're working remotely, the assumption is based off of their personality. So it could be that they are shirking responsibility, they're trying to avoid you, or they're simply just messing around, right? So this creates a kind of cognitive dissonance where your manager thinks that you're not working because you're lazy, whereas you might not be working because there's nothing to do. So this creates a kind of tension, but there are many reasons for it, right? So I think this is just a really interesting question to ask and ponder about: is remote working going to stay around when we have COVID under control, quote unquote? And it doesn't seem like it. The more we vaccinate folks and life starts to return to some semblance of normality, the more we see companies kind of pushing back on the remote work thing and saying, we should actually be working from an office. But yeah, I think one of the most important things is that if you can work from home, you should probably approach the powers that be within your organization and state your case. But yeah, I think it's just a really interesting study. I think we'll link to both of these, both pieces that I covered, because the other side of the report is that digital transformation has actually been pushed backwards in a lot of businesses since the pandemic hits, which is really interesting from a business perspective if you are a decision maker within your business. But yeah, that's the Digital Corporation in South Africa Report 2021 from Worldwide Works.
Offer counterpoint quick. Yeah. As a Joe Schmo, I'm not a professor. I have to provide that distinction. But I'm sure the professor did, you know, factor this in. But I have to wonder how much of that perception of not being there in person equals not working has to just do with tradition.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the modern workplace isn't so modern. It's been around for decades. And we're just so used to it as a species that anything else will seem strange. So I have to wonder how much of that is a real psychological problem that they kind of need to get over themselves with, honestly, and how much of that is just, this is how things are going, people aren't ready for it. And then I also have to think that, and this is something I have very strong feelings about, the whole middle management part of any mid large size business, where middle managers become almost redundant if we're all working from home, because then you just need the higher management to, you know, to keep everything in check. And I think these middle managers who still have a modicum of power for now might find themselves, no one say on the street, but on their butts if they don't get things together, and they are pushing to get us back into the office. And then there's the whole conversation of we're not saving the planet, but we're helping the planet by not commuting every day and burning petrol. And there's all these other things that I don't want to get into because, like I said, I'm just Joe Schmo. A lot of people with big degrees and doctorates and things like that have said things for my argument and against my argument. I just think it's worth keeping in mind. And I've also been speaking to a lot of people in the STEM category, I don't know, the STEM workplaces. And a lot of them are saying, if I have to leave my job, I'm not going to another job where I have to work in an office. That's for the birds. These are people who are in high demand, especially in South Africa, and they can make, I don't want to say demands, but when they are in the hiring process, they have a bit of a say because these companies need their work so badly.
Yeah,
and they can kind of, yeah, they have the leverage, and they can kind of say, I want to work, you know, at home 3 days a week, all of the time, or one day a week, whatever, because they have that power in the relationship. But for everybody else, I can't say the same. But there is a lot of people who don't want to go back to offices. And the last thing I want to say, I did kind of hijack this, is that every expert in the field of biology has said that this pandemic isn't a one and done thing. We're going to see a lot more pandemics in our lifetimes. And I don't understand why these companies and these decision makers in these companies don't at least plan for this to happen again. They want to move so fast back to how things were, and it seems like they're putting very little thought into this happening again. People, I don't know if they're being woefully ignorant. They just want to not think about this happening again. But it's going to happen again. It's almost a certainty. In our lifetimes, we'll have something on the level or worse than COVID-19. So why not make your company future-proof now? Anyway, I'm preaching to the choir, I'm sure. We'll put a link to Brendan's stories. Robin, do you want to chime in on that, or do you want to get to the games?
I'll just say one thing that I think we'll probably see an adoption of a hybrid working model.
Yeah.
Then a fully fledged return, especially with this thing carrying on as long as it has. I think people that are working remotely are used to that now, are getting more used to it, and they'll probably want a hybrid model, maybe coming in twice a week, once a week for really important stuff, but working remotely most of the time.
Yeah. And as people who have worked remotely and hybrid, you can do both. I'm speaking for the entire team here, but you can do both. You can have your big meetings in person or your big project planning, and then you can just work from home. It works. Anyway, it's not for everyone, I understand. Let's get into the main topic. We're more than halfway done with 2021 already. It feels like the year just flew by, but we're getting closer to the end of the year. But despite that, there's still a lot of big games on the horizon. So we want to talk about what we're looking forward to before we get to 2022, because it seems that 2022 has leached a lot of the games from 2021. Again, the pandemic put a big dent in game development schedules, and a lot of these publishers and developers have said, let's put in extra time and do it next year. So next year is going to be a big blockbuster in terms of releases, but this year still has a lot to give. So we're going to talk about what we're looking forward to. And I think we're going to start with you, Robin. What are you looking forward to before the end is before the end is here? Jeez.
Wow.
Before the end of the year is here. That was a bit dark.
You know something that I don't?
Come on, Clinton. Compromise. Beans.
They're on to me. What are you looking forward to over there?
Yeah, so I kind of highlighted three games. One that I really am interested in, one that I have negative thoughts around, and the other that kind of taps into some nostalgia. So the one that I'm really looking forward to is Ghost of Tsushima Director's Cut. So that's essentially a DLC for last year's Ghost of Tsushima, which I really loved. I reckon I kind of placed it as my kind of game of the year, just as far as the experience it delivered for me. It was a great palate cleanser after the intensity that was The Last of Us Part 2. And I am a bit of an otaku. I like everything Japanese, samurai focus, those kind of things. I really love that stuff. So Ghost of Tsushima was really up my alley. And the game was beautiful. I don't know if you guys have played it, but I really enjoyed it. And I'm really looking forward to the director's cut.
I borrowed the Office PS5 and I played it. And it's, I 100% agree with you, Robin. It was so fun. And it had some serious stakes, but it wasn't as psychologically draining as A Last of Us. And it was just a good time, and you got to slice people up in slow motion. Who doesn't like that?
100%. So Director's Cut is coming out 20th August. There's going to be a PS4 version, a PS5 version. It is a little expensive. So the PS4 version will cost you 1,199 Rand. And the PS5 version will cost you 1,369 Rand. So it is definitely AAA pricing. I am interested to see how much content they really pack into this. As far as we've seen from the DLC so far, you're going to be traveling to, I believe it's pronounced Iki Island, and you're going to be investigating some Mongolian activity there. There was a trailer that was released recently that kind of showcased what Jin Sakai, who is the protagonist, is going to be having to deal with. It looks there is some kind of, I guess, Far Cry-esque hallucinogenic element to it. Anyone that's kind of watched Marco Polo on Netflix will know that the Mongolian tribes do kind of go into that kind of shaman and psychedelic trance-like states when they want to kind of predict what's going to happen in the future or make big decisions and stuff like that. So I hope they don't lean too much into that. I hope they still kind of keep the core elements that made Ghost of Tsushima so great. Really looking forward to explore the island. And I'm also looking forward to kind of seeing visually how impressive it's going to be on the PS5. We played it on the PS4 when we reviewed it. I think the version that Clinton played was also the PS4 version.
It was the PS4 version, but it was on the PS5, and apparently it does get... I'm not sure of the specifics, but they did... I don't want to say they cleaned it up, but they did make some graphical changes, so it looks better on PS5. Even though I was only playing on a 1080p screen, even on 1080p, according to what I read, they did polish it up, and also on PS5, you got higher frame rates at 1080p.
Okay, so yeah, so then I'm definitely looking forward to kind of seeing what other kind of visual improvements they made for the PS5 version, because just from I know that camera modes often get chucked into games perhaps unnecessarily or just as a kind of afterthought, but the camera mode on the photo mode on Ghost of Tsushima, every single frame looks like a Hollywood work of art. That's how great the game has been so far, so that's what I'm definitely looking forward to. The other game that I am looking forward to, but I have a lot of negative thoughts around, is FIFA 2022. So I've been playing FIFA for a very long time. I'm one of the people that, despite the iterative nature of the game and the very small differences in between different years, different of the titles, I still kind of, I guess, stick with it because it's one of the first games I played on PC, and it's one of the franchises that I still enjoy because I enjoy watching football in general. So I'm interested to see what EA has kind of done here, for especially on the PS5. Last year, before the PS5 and the Xbox Series X and S were launched, they kind of spoke about next-gen gaming. They had a very glitzy-looking trailer, as they always do, but there wasn't really much substance. I got to play FIFA 21 both on the PS4 and PS5. Visually, the PS5 version, you could definitely see the improvements, but again, from a gameplay perspective, not much has been improved, not much has changed. Again, EA are kind of billing FIFA 22 as being the best FIFA of all time, taking a leaf out of Apple's playbook there. And it just feels like it's about time that EA Sports kind of really delivers on the promise, because if I'm looking at the pricing on the PlayStation Store, the standard edition of the game costs 1,069 Rand, which is not... It's not that surprising, because next-gen console games are really expensive at the moment. The Ultimate Edition is 1,580 Rand. I'm not too sure...
Just get some trading cards with that.
Yeah, it's the pricing is getting ridiculous right now. So I understand that EA doesn't really have a massive say as far as the pricing goes, but we need to start delivering now. Because...
Go ahead, yeah, Chris.
Go ahead, guys.
Sorry. Robin, did you perhaps watch EA Play Live yesterday evening?
I didn't see the one last evening, but I did see some of the gameplay reveals that came out earlier in the month.
So,
but yeah, go ahead.
So I don't want to talk... I rather want to point to a game that was announced yesterday, and that's Grid Legends. And there's tech in that game. It's called Extended Reality. They used it in The Mandalorian. I haven't seen The Mandalorian, so I don't know how well the application is.
No one in South Africa has legally seen that show, Brett.
Yeah, I haven't even seen it illegally. So, I mean, I don't really know what the application of it was. But in the trailer for that game, I actually had to do a bit of a double take, because the models or the graphics of the people within that game look scarily realistic, and I wonder whether FIFA would benefit from something like that moving forward into the future. Because I think we'll maybe just link to the story we wrote about EA Play at the bottom of this post, but I mean, something like that in a car game, is it's all right, you know, you get to see like between post races and stuff. But I think in something like FIFA, where there's a really big focus on likenesses and humans, and how badly humans are really portrayed in most video games, I think that it would benefit from something like that. I don't know. That's just me speculating, because, yeah it's just such good technology. Like, honestly, if you haven't seen that trailer, just even if you hate racing games, go and check what the team at Codemasters have done with the Frostbite engine and Extended Reality. It is amazing.
I have to point out something ridiculous, is that the PC version of FIFA 2022, or FIFA 22, is actually FIFA 21 with just some small changes instead of being a new game. Again, I'll link to this because I don't think we covered it. It just happened when we weren't on the site. But the PC version costs the same, but it doesn't have the next-gen features, which is ridiculous. EA, and especially FIFA, has always... I don't want to say looked down upon, but they haven't supported PC properly, and now they're doing it even less because they know people will buy the game regardless, which is nonsense. And there's been a lot of other kerfuffles involving this game, aside from what Robin mentioned, that even though people are looking forward to it, they're just doing everything they can to be a bad company and to extract every cent from its customers.
Yeah, in the great, I guess, FIFA versus PES debate, I've always leaned towards PES purely for the fact... Sorry, that's Pro Evolution Soccer, if anyone doesn't know.
yeah, PES doesn't exist anymore, Robin.
I've always kind of leaned towards that side, what Konami were doing, purely from the way it looked and the way it actually played on pitch.
Yeah.
And, yeah, FIFA have gotten it wrong so many times. I've seen, like I said, I saw their gameplay kind of reveal and how they're tinkering now with the speed mechanic. And every single time that EA kind of tinkers with a mechanic in the game, it immediately becomes overpowered. So I wouldn't be surprised if the same thing happens here. There's some kind of like burst mode as far as sprinting goes.
That's again, realistic. Super real. I sometimes when I'm running, I feel like, oh, I can just hit the turbo and go a bit faster. What the hell?
That is literally something we used to do in primary school when you were running around the field on break. I use my NOS. I'm going faster than you. And it's just to go back to that, what I mentioned there, PES has been renamed eFootball or eSoccer. It's hilarious that they've renamed that game. I just thought I'd mention that if people were wondering what the hell I was talking about.
Yeah, so like I said, I think EA Sports, they are, I think they have in the eye of the community, but the fact is, because of their licensing is so strong, they're always, and the fact that they pump so much money into esports, they are going to be the winners. And that's the kind of unfortunate thing. I'm hoping that changes. I say that, I guess, more blindly hoping, but we'll see what happens. When the game is released, when is it going to be? 1st of October this year. We'll see what happens. And hopefully the PS5 version, it looks great and actually plays equally as good when it comes out. The third game, I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I think we're all pretty much in agreement as far as it being one try and play, is Age of Empires 4. That really taps into nostalgia when I was first playing on a PC on the Windows 95, those Encarta days. I really want to see whether or not they can conjure up those emotions that I had playing the game. And also, really, if it's historically accurate as far as the different battles and wars that are taking place, if they can keep those timelines all neatly packaged, that's great as well. So, yeah, that's... I'm going to have to try and find a way to play the game. I'm a Mac guy and a PlayStation guy, so we'll see if I can wrangle something. But yeah, those are kind of my three games that I'm looking forward to round out the rest of the year.
Cool. And just before we go on to Brendan, who's going to talk about some games which are already out. Robin, when you played Ghost of Tsushima, did you put the Japanese audio option on?
I did
not. Am I calling you out here? Am I going to take away from your street cred? You can say you listen to it in English.
No, I did everything in English. I did try out, I forget what it's called now. There's a special mode.
Where it's in black and white.
Like a film. Yeah. The guy who directed Seven Samurai, I forget his name now. Apologies.
Kurosawa, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Kurosawa, yeah. So I did try out that aspect, but as far as the voice acting, I was happy to keep it with the English one. I did however notice that I think the Japanese version dub, the actual movement of the mouths were kind of matched to that as well, if I remember correctly.
That's why I also wanted to bring it up, is because the director's cut will actually add lip syncing for Japanese voiceover.
Oh, wow.
And it's strange that wasn't there in the base game, because in the advertising for the game, they're like, oh, we've got full Japanese voice acting, and this is how the way we encourage you to play it. But then they didn't do lip syncing for it. It's very odd that they left it out and it was part of their marketing. Just wanted to bring that up because we're going to move it over to Brendan now. What are you looking forward to the games you already play? Because I know you've got some, I don't know if I'd call them vices, but I've played some of these games before, and I know when addiction is real. So what are you looking forward to, Brendan?
So it's less looking forward to and more morbid curiosity about what is going to happen with at least two of these games. The one I am looking forward to, but let's go with the two that I'm curious about. So the first one is Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk has had a really, rocky release since it was launched last year. It hasn't gone well for CD Projekt Red. We can go on and on about the mistakes they've made. But what I want to talk about is something that has been coming and we've been expecting since the game's launch, which is free DLC. So this is unlikely to be something like on the level of The Witcher 3's Heart of Stone or Blood and Wine, things like that, but rather more like The Witcher content packs, where you got some new outfits and some new hair things and stuff like that. So there's been a couple of leaks regarding what this DLC could be comprised of, and most of it is stuff you would expect, right? Things like weapon packs, some different clothing for your character. But then there's other things like a new game plus mode, which would be very, very cool. because once you finish Cyberpunk 2077, there's not really much more to do, right? I mean, you can continue playing the game, but you kind of run out of stuff to do very quickly. Other things that are really interesting are things like there seem to be missions coming. Now, all of this is based off of file names. So things like DLC4_KAB01, DLC1_SWP, right? So there's certain things like that you can kind of infer. So things like cars, additional clothing, poses. But things that I would really like to see in the game are, first off, the ability to customize your character once you're in the game, and not only being able to customize them at the start of the game. I think that is something that is weirdly missing from Cyberpunk. In a world where everybody is able to swap out components and change how they look and change body parts, the fact that you can't change what you look like is just bizarre to me. Even if we can just change our haircuts, that would be awesome. And then other things like being able to customize your apartments. Like, your apartment was portrayed as this really important thing in the trailers. And even in the game, like, there's a place for all the weapons you collect to be displayed. But I think I went into my apartment. Sorry?
Oh. And then they don't fill it out.
Yeah.
I just want to add an explanation here for people who probably haven't played it, and probably because people like us told them not to, which is fair enough. In your apartment in the game, you have a wall of hooks where there's obviously the outline of weapons. And you're like, oh, cool. Through the game, I'll unlock the weapons and they'll go on the wall. And no matter how many weapons you get, those never get filled out and you can never put them on the wall to, you
know,
show
them off. Yeah.
Look, it's such a tease. It feels like something they added as like an aspirational addition, and then they just didn't have time to add that into the game.
Yeah, so being able to customize your apartment would be really nice, or, you know, go into buy another apartment or buy property and stuff like that. Just give us something to do in the game after it's finished, right? Because there's one of the worst parts about the entire Cyberpunk experience is how rushed it feels, because there's constantly this thing in the back of your head going, you have to finish the main mission, you have to finish the main mission, you have to finish the main mission, and it's just set up really, really poorly, in my opinion. So giving the game a bit more longevity would be really, really nice. One other thing I would like to see is, if you've played the game, you'll know that within your ability section, there's one section that is grayed out. And sorry, spoilers. Once you finish the game, it gets a logo and it says Relic. I'd really like if the DLC opens that up and gives players a bit more, a few more abilities or some new stats or some new things to try out. Like, just being able to expand the gameplay would be really, really nice. Yeah. And it would give me a reason to go back and play the game again, especially if there's a new game plus mode, because I have a save that I've been guarding with my life for this game, where I pretty much maxed out my character before going into the final mission.
A bad choice.
It was a very bad choice, because
it makes the last mission so easy.
Such a joke.
Oh my god. The final boss in that game, I killed him with less than one clip of my shotgun. It was a shotgun with a clip. I'm not saying that.
Did you do the so-called secret ending where you attack the final area on your own?
No, I didn't. But okay. In every ending, you fight the final guy.
Yeah, but so I did that mission, right? And I got my behind handed to me because I wasn't a high enough level. So I went back to that save and I just grinded a few more levels, got some better weapons, adjusted my character build, and it was an absolute joke. So some difficulty modifiers would be awesome as well. I'm just hoping that CD Projekt Red releases this at the end of the year or before the end of the year. We have no confirmation of that. And given the state of the game, I don't think that we will get this DLC before the end of the year, but my hope is that we do.
And that last ability, they could even make it overpowered.
Yeah.
Because they could save it for the end of the game with the new game plus, and then it doesn't really matter if you're overpowered regardless.
Because you will be already. So, yeah. I think this would be some cool... DLC. Obviously, there are other things that I would really like to see in the game, like the bridge that goes off to the spaceport. I mean, that's just closed off. And when you go there, it says, well, you can't go there now. It'll be available at a later stage.
And flying cars that were shown off in the trailers, even the ability to lean out of your car and use your gun isn't in the game. And that was shown off in all the trailers. It's hilarious.
Go on a train, you know, the train system.
The first ever trailer has V, your character, on a train, and then you can't ride the trains in the game. Robin, you played on PS4 when it first came out, and you had an awful time, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I used to get kicked out maybe every hour or so. After all the patches and fixes, that kind of aspect of the experience hasn't been too bad. That said, I really am not too keen on any DLC that they have for this game. It would have to be revolutionary for me to jump back into it. So burnt have I been by my Cyberpunk experience.
Absolutely fair. I think that whatever CD Projekt Red does with this game moving forward, it has to be spectacular. As I said, I'm just morbidly curious. The reason the game is still installed on my PC is because I'm curious to see what happens with their next updates. Moving on, the next thing I want to talk about is a game that released earlier this year, which is Outriders. And Outriders has had a bit of a rocky year since its release. So first off, there was the obvious launch day bugs where you couldn't even get on into the game because servers were just creaking under the weight of all the people trying to get in. And then there's been several issues with bugs where players were being one-shot. They weren't actually being one-shot, as we later learned. Instead, what was happening is an enemy was attacking twice very quickly, and there was a delay in the damage registration. So yeah, it hasn't had the best outing. But recently, People Can Fly has been making a number of really important improvements to the game. And that includes things like the rate at which legendary weapons drop, which are the highest tier of weapons and armor. And if you, like us, played the game at launch completely through as far as you could into the end game, you likely didn't encounter much legendary gear at all. That has now changed. Been various gameplay balance fixes, but there is still work to be done on the game, and that leads me to where DLC comes in. So People Can Fly have said that if there is interest, they will continue to support the game going forward, and I think that there is enough interest in this game that we could perhaps see some DLC. So I just want to talk about what we could see from that DLC. So the first thing I would expect is for Expeditions, which is endgame content, to change drastically. As they stand at the moment, they are a terrible implementation of endgame content. As somebody who spends most of their time playing Destiny and games like that, where endgame content is kind of where you are striving to go, I think that this is by far one of the worst implementations of that sort of content. Essentially, you have a time limit to complete a mission, and if you don't complete the mission within that time limit, you might as well have not completed the mission in the first place, which is just really, really bad. It's disrespectful of players' times or of player time. But more than that, I think that the way People Can Fly told the story, they left a lot of room for the possibility of exploring Enoch, the planet that you're on, a little bit more. And I hope that DLC goes into that, or we go back to areas we've been and we uncover more history about them, because we learn through the game that there was a indigenous species or an indigenous people that were on this planet before humanity arrived. I don't want to spoil the game because there's a decent twist at the end. But going back to that would be really, really awesome. Or just exploring more of this planet, because there are some really awesome biomes in this game. Like, you go from dense forest to destroyed towns that have towering towers that loom above you and were made by this ancient race. And we never learn much about them aside from how they died and why they're not around anymore. So it would be really cool to go back and see and explore more of that. Maybe see how humanity has changed on Enoch since humans have come to it. Like, it would just be nice to build on this world, because People Can Fly has really built an awesome, interesting world to look at here. I mean, the premise of the game is pretty cool. Earth is dying. A whole bunch of people get on spaceships and fly to this new planet that they believe can house life. So I'd really like to see some more DLC from Outriders. I don't think this game, as much as they say it's not a live service, I don't think it's a game that you just want to play and then leave and forget about. There are some really cool aspects to this game, and it's fun. That, above all, it is a really fun game to play. So I'd really like to see more from them.
So I only played the demo. I didn't play the full game, but I wonder if some DLC could take you back to Earth.
That would be even more awesome, because there is a huge mothership floating in space where you come down from, and it has all sorts of stuff. It's just getting back up to that place. Though I could see them using the end game content that you unlock as a way to lead into DLC that takes you back to Earth. That would be really, really awesome, and see how Earth has changed. Maybe introduce some Earth-like species. Who knows? Maybe they'll do that for Outriders 2.
Maybe it's a sequel and not an addition for this one. And your last one has been one we've spoken about before, Brendan.
Yes.
And this is the addiction one. I played Warframe, and when I look at everything to do with Destiny 2, I think, man, that's a lot like when I was addicted to Warframe for a year.
So, Destiny 2. So, I want to talk about the next batch of DLC that's coming, which is part of Bungie's seasonal model for Destiny. So, if you haven't been keeping up with Destiny in the past couple of years, here's a quick recap. So, instead of releasing a major expansion three times a year, or three major expansions in a year, now what Bungie does is they release one major expansion, and then they have seasons that go on for 4 months at a time, and there are three seasons each year. But this year is different, because right at the top of 2021, Bungie came out and said that there are going to be delays for the next expansion, which we know is called The Witch Queen. And that's brought on by COVID and obviously the scope that they want to reach with this game. So it's absolutely something that is understandable. It's not like, oh, we're just delaying it because we want to crunch our employees. It's because they don't want to crunch that they are delaying it. So as a result of that, Bungie's seasonal model has shifted a bit, because now The Witch Queen will only release in 2022. However, since Beyond Light's launch last year in November, the story beat of the seasons from season to season has been... I'm actually speechless. I can't find the words to describe how good it is. There was a meme many years ago when Destiny first released that but Destiny doesn't have a story. And if it does have a story, you have to go off to a website on Bungie's website and read grimoire cards to learn about the story. But this time around, Bungie has dived into storytelling, and it is incredible, because not only are they leveraging story points that were kind of left in nothingness or with no conclusion in the past, they're bringing those in and they are building off of them to something that is really, really awesome and has people going, well, what's going to happen next? And unfortunately, we don't know what's going to happen next, because Bungie is keeping that under wraps. And we'll only know more on 24th of August, when Bungie has a VODOC going out, and that will showcase a whole bunch of things, what's coming in the next year. But I do just want to talk about the current season and what it holds for the next couple of months. So, long story short, an alien has overtaken the last human city and pushed it into an endless night. And throughout the season, we learn about this omnipotent force that is pulling the strings behind the scenes, that is basically controlling this alien. If you play Destiny and you're cringing at the sound of me calling a Vex Hive or a Vex mind, an alien, sorry, I'm trying to make this accessible for everybody. So we discover that there is a dark force behind the scenes that is pulling things, and there is a thought that one of the dark force behind the scenes is actually somebody who's front and center and kind of pivotal to the good guys' side of the story. It's a lot of speculation at the moment. I don't want to go into who that is. If you are interested, I would suggest you go and do a bit of reading on Reddit or the Raid Secret subreddit, because there are a bunch of theories about how this is going to play out. But where Bungie is going with the story, it is going to pay off in an absolutely massive way. If you were somebody who played Destiny 1 and you got hooked back into the game with the Taken King expansion, I have a suspicion that this next season and the expansion that follows that season are going to be as good as that expansion, just because of the way Bungie is setting up the story. There's just so much good stuff happening in Destiny, and if you haven't played the game, you can play it, you can try it out for free right now. There are limitations to that, but if you love good storytelling, absolutely give Destiny 2 a try. The next season is scheduled to start, as I said, on the 24th of August. And I, for one, I'm so keen to see what Bungie has done. It's my mind is actually blown at how good things have been and how great things are from a storytelling perspective with this company at the moment. That's something I'm definitely looking forward to. And it really is just the highlight of my year at the moment, is seeing where Bungie goes next with the lead up to the reveal of Savathun and this whole big, massive conspiracy that's been building behind the scenes. So yeah, it's definitely something to look out for, in my opinion.
I've still been wanting to play that game, but like I said, I didn't get burned with Warframe, but I know exactly what kind of game this is, and I just, I don't know. I don't want to get stuck into a whole game that is less of a game and more of a hobby.
I mean,
so I don't know. Maybe in a few years when there's Destiny 3, I'll then go to Destiny 2 and I'll play everything where, I don't need to pay R1 million to change the color of my armor.
The fun thing is, right, is that there are so many good content creators who cover the lore. There's a guy whose name is My Name is Bife. And if all you want to know, or if all you want to experience is the storyline of Destiny 2, I'd recommend just watching a few of his videos, because Bungie really does have some great storytellers. There are so many ways that they, just for instance, this later season, they deal with racism and xenophobia in such a good and clever way that most of the time you're not even thinking that, oh, this is racism, this is xenophobia. They just present it so well, and you kind of sit there. There's one point where you're actually sitting shouting at one of the other characters in the game, and you realize, oh, hang on. Okay, I get it now. I get what's going on in the world now. This is a clever way to do that. So yeah, definitely go check out what Bungie is doing with storytelling. It is phenomenal. But that's enough of me rambling. Clinton, what are you looking forward to?
I'm going to end us off here and talk about some of the games I'm looking forward to, starting with a little franchise. You may have heard of it called Pokemon.
Never heard of it.
When I brought up Pokemon in the past, Brendan's not even joking there. Both he and Robin aren't the biggest Pokemon fan. So this game comes with a lot of baggage. So the ones I'm talking about are, is it Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl? I hate when they put the adjectives. They did this with the other ones as well. Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl. They are remakes of Diamond and Pearl. And the first big problem with this is that the games look, I don't want to be so crass as to say they look awful. They've got a very divisive, chibi look to everything, where everything is purposely cartoonish. And if you showed this to someone and said this was a Pokemon ripoff made by some nameless company in China that's being sold on the Google Play Store, you'd say, yeah, 100%, that's what it is. So for it to be an official Pokemon game it's a little off-putting. There are some people who really like this art style, but there's more people who say, either just give us what the old art style was, or just do something better. And I'm on the latter category. I wish it didn't look like this. I even would have liked it if they went back to old school pixelated art, because the last Pokemon games that used pixel art, I think it was Black and White, they looked fantastic. Game Freak, for all its flaws, were at that time masters of doing pixel art, and even pixel art involving 3D aspects. So when they made the jump to 3D, they really lost a lot of that charm, and that's not even nostalgia talking. It just looked better in certain places. So this game has baggage from that front, and also because it's a remake, the fans have been asking for remakes of these games for a long time. And it's funny, Pokemon Unite came out just this week, and I remember the announcement for Pokemon Unite, a lot of people were disappointed, not because it's a Pokemon MOBA, but because at the time, a lot of people were expecting a remake of Diamond and Pearl. So when the announcement was finally made, after all these years of asking for it, and it looks like this, people were not happy. And on top of all of this, I've talked about it in the past, Pokemon Sword and Shield, which were the most recent mainline game releases, were not received very well. And I will stand by that. I'm definitely one of the people who will give Game Freak flack to the end of time, that they have almost infinite money, but they still put out a product that is very subpar in terms of a Pokemon experience. And I know there's other factors. They wanted to get it out at a certain time to please the board and everything else, and maybe that's exactly what they wanted to make, and it was not no outside pressure. Whatever the reason, it was a letdown in many regards, and I, like a lot of people, feel that the Pokemon franchise is not living up to its potential. But all that said, I am going to play this. Now, here's the thing, right? Robin said he's going to play FIFA, and I said I'm going to play this, but I might be getting a review copy of this. If I wasn't getting a review copy of this, I don't know if I would play it. And let me say this. Before I started working as a journalist, so the first Pokemon game that came out when I started as a journalist was Sun and Moon, which was a few years ago now. I think even more than five. Before that time, I bought every Pokemon game, a physical copy, because I love the franchise, and I don't really collect the physical games, but it just became something I did. I've got all the physical copies ever since the original Pokemon games. And after these last few games being so bland, I don't know if I would buy Shining Pearl and Brilliant Diamond if it was my own money. If I don't, you know, if we don't get a review code or something else happens that for whatever reason I don't get a code for this game, I don't know if I'm going to buy it. Even though it's one of the top three games I'm looking forward to, I don't know if I'll buy it. And that's not me saying I'll wait for it to go down in price, because anyone who knows anything about Nintendo games knows that they don't go down in price. So, yeah, it's a very much love-hate relationship. I love the franchise. Game Freak loves my money, but there's a lot of animosity in that relationship. So we'll see. And I'll show, I think if I showed this to you later in the Slack channel, you guys would say, this is a game from 2021? Yeah, it looks like a game from more than a decade ago. So that's Pokemon. I'm a slave to Pokemon. I was cursed by someone a long time ago to be a slave to it. I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Is that the new theme song?
Yeah. They're working the part with someone getting cursed. You're joking, but there's a lot of stuff about curses and people dying in ghost Pokemon in the franchise. So wouldn't be too out of left field for the franchise.
I just have a quick question, Clinton. Sure. Have you played Pokemon Unite? Or is that something you're not interested in?
I downloaded it. You know, when Dota was first taking off, I downloaded it and I played it for a while, and I said, I don't understand why people like this so much.
Yeah.
But let me say, I did the same for PUBG and I did the same for Minecraft. So maybe I don't know what people like. Maybe I'm just weird.
Maybe.
I haven't played it yet. Now, you guys don't have Switches, but Pokemon Unite is actually coming to mobile, so you can try it if you like. Have you guys gotten into MOBAs at all? I know they're kind of like hard drugs where you get a little taste and then you're addicted.
So yesterday, watching EA Play Live, I saw they were announcing Apex Legends. I think it's called Emergence. I could be wrong, or Resurgence, something to that effect. And I thought for a shining moment that they were going to do a MOBA mode for Apex Legends. And then I learned, no, it's just the name of the next season. So I used to play Dota a lot. Like, you talk about how I'm addicted to Destiny. I was full-on addicted to Dota. So much so that I eventually sold off all of my in-game Dota items, and I've been able to basically fill out my Steam library using those items by selling them on the marketplace. So I'm actually kind of interested in this Pokemon Unite because it's a MOBA, and it's kind of where I became accustomed to gaming with multiple people, like playing online and that sort of thing. So I'm kind of interested to see what it's like. I mean, what's the worst that could happen, right? I waste a couple of minutes of my time, a couple of megs of bandwidth data, and yeah, I don't know. It seems quite fun.
Yeah. I have a flash forward to like 6 months from now where Brendan calls me at 3 a.m. It's like, hey, Clinton, what's a Snorlax? Why is he a good blocker on my MOBA team? You, Robin, did you get involved with MOBAs at all?
No, I'm an old man, guys. It kind of passed me by. I'm not really interested in that kind of stuff. Sorry.
No, I mean, the same thing happened with me. I played it and I said, I don't understand why these kids like this so much, and I never touched it again. So my other game, you guys may have played the first one. Dying Light 2 is finally coming out the new Pokemon games are coming out on 19th November. So all my games are right near the end of the year. Dying Light 2 is coming out on the 7th of December. And I maintain that Dying Light may be one of the best zombie games ever made. It is such a fun game to play. And it has a double flying kick. And I think it should be illegal to make any first-person shooter if you can't do a double flying kick in your game.
I agree with you there, Clinton.
Once I become president of the world, I'm going to enact that. And I'm also going to put in a rule where movies and TV shows can't show people swallowing medication without drinking some water at the same time. Dying Light 2 hasn't been in development hell. It's just been delayed a few times. And now and again, we get stories about people leaving the studio and the studio goes radio silent for long periods of times. It doesn't look like it's had the smoothest development. And people, myself included, again, even though I put these on my list, they all have caveats. I'm really excited to play Dying Light 2. If reviews come in and it's good, I'll play it on day one, even if I have to buy myself a copy. And that isn't just me, that's like journalistic privilege. I don't buy games when they come out at full price, even before I had this job. So for me to say I'm going to buy it day one full price is a big thing. Brendan, you kind of you had a little jolt there. You played the first game, you liked it.
I think you say it's probably, I will go out on a limb and say it is the best zombie game ever made. Yeah.
When Dying Light 2, Dying Light 1 came out, even back then, it was a long time ago at this point, even back then people were kind of fatigued with zombie games, and then this came out and blew so many of them out of the water. And it's just so fun, and there's kind of a horror aspect to it where you play at night and it terrifies you, and then I just don't play at night because I'm a little baby. I hate horror games. This game is so much fun. It's got a big focus on melee combat, but there's also range combat with guns. There's cool crafting. There's a big parkour aspect to it, so it has a lot of not first-person puzzles, but a lot of free running that feels good to do. And there's just so many interesting things you can do. You can lure zombies into traps. You can just take them on head-on. You can fight them during the day so they're weaker, but then you can go at night and they're stronger, but you get better rewards. There's just so much to do. And also, they've released so much content and so much DLC over the years that my first playthrough, my only playthrough was on Steam, and I put in, sorry, this is happening in real time, folks. I put in 33 hours, and I didn't even finish the expansions. That was just the main game, and then just a few of the extra missions. I didn't finish everything just because life got a bit busy, and I didn't have time to go back, and then Dying Light 2 was announced years ago, and then I was like, oh, I'll just wait for Dying Light 2. And now it's been like 4 or 5 years since it was announced. So I'm very much looking forward to it. Robin, have you played Dying Light 1?
I have played it, yeah. I really enjoyed it. I like the fact that you have like control and power. It's not just about you running away or trying to survive. You can actually do things that other zombie games don't really give you.
Yeah, and I think in the next game, you're also in a city that has kind of rebuilt after the apocalypse. So there's going to be a larger focus on kind of mankind coming back. And hopefully that means more interesting weapons and things you can do with the zombies. So yeah, that's Dying Light 2. There have been some trailers released so far, but for how long it's been in development and how close we are now to it coming out, we actually haven't seen that much. And I think in the next few months, as we get closer to the end of the year, they're really going to ramp stuff up. And my last pick, and that's going to round off our podcast when we finish discussing it, is Forza Horizon 5. Now, I, like a lot of people, I didn't look down on the Forza games. I just kind of saw them as a meme. Because every time there was an Xbox announcement or conference of some kind, there was a very fancy sports car in the stage, on the stage. And I think it was Dunkey or somebody said that an orange sports car is just the closest thing Microsoft has to a mascot. And that's how I always thought of the Forza series. And then I got Xbox Game Pass. And then I played Forza Horizon 4. And then I played Forza Horizon 4 for a few hundred hours. I love that game. It's so good. And the only reason I stopped playing it a few months ago was because I 100%ed it and I had everything. And I was just logging in every day to get login bonuses that piled on top of everything else I had. So I 100%ed that game and I'm probably most excited out of all those games. There's really no caveat here about Forza Horizon 5. I'm just so hyped for it. It comes out on 9th of November. Not only is it coming out on Xbox Game Pass day one, so everyone who has that can get in for free, but it's also being released on Steam. So if you don't like Game Pass or you don't like the Microsoft Store, you can just buy it on Steam. The only real problem here is that it's not available on PlayStation, and I hate that because it's such a good game series that I want more people to play it.
Yeah, I remember, like, I always used to hold the Gran Turismo series in very high regard. Although I suppose comparing it to Forza is not really fair because Gran Turismo is more simulation than an arcade racer. But I do think that in terms of stronger racing properties on consoles, I have to give it to Forza. It's just there is so much right with that game. Even like, and this is going for the simulator and Horizons, there is so much good with those games. It boggles my mind how they managed to make those games better and better every single time they release them. I just don't know how they do it. I can't tell you how they do it because...
Yeah, because the game looks fantastic and it runs so well.
Yeah.
I think Forza Horizon 4 has the biggest, I don't know what you'd call it, a ratio of how good it looks to how well it performs.
Yeah.
It is just so rock solid in terms of the performance and how photorealistic everything looks. And the strange thing is, you know, we're talking about sims, simulators. Forza Horizon is the arcade part of the franchise, and Forza Motorsport is the more simulation part of the franchise. And they usually go Horizon, Motorsport, but this time they went Horizon.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because Horizon 4 was so popular and continues to be so popular. And I do feel for the people who wanted Motorsport, but I can't hide how excited I am about Forza Horizon 4. And it's not really an RPG, but there's so much to collect and unlock that it kind of feels like one. And I don't know how much of that was the fact that I played Horizon 4 after it had been out for many years, so there was a lot of content for me to work through. But we'll see. When Horizon 5 comes out, I'm going to play it at launch 100%, and we'll see how it goes. Now, Robin, we're kind of leaving you out of this conversation. Did you play? Have you ever played this, maybe at like a friend's house or an event or anything? Have you ever tried the Forza franchise?
Yeah, I have. I just want to stay for the record, and I think I've stated this before. If these colors don't run, I am Gran Turismo always and forever. That said, I did get to dabble in the franchise early on when I had Xbox 360 for like a minute. And it really impressed me. Like you guys said, I think as far as arcade racing, the Need for Speed franchise is off the rails. I don't know what's happening there. So, yeah.
Rails in a bad way.
Yeah.
Not like art. So it's extreme. No, it's really lost its way in recent years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think Forza is definitely the go-to as far as an arcade racer goes. So, yeah. I think like Age of Empires, I'm going to try and find a way to play it somehow.
The problem also with Forza Horizon 4 is that it has ruined every game that involves driving for me. After I played Forza Horizon 4, I re-downloaded Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto has always had driving, but it's always been kind of not great. And when I went back and played Grand Theft Auto 5, I had such a horrible time driving. And then I also went back and I played Need for Speed Heat. And I thought something was wrong with my game because the driving was so bad.
And I think you obviously don't drive a lot in Cyberpunk then.
Yeah, and then I don't know who I spoke to, but I was like, is Need for Speed like this? Because they also played Forza, and they're like, yeah, it's just not as good. So Yeah, and then so much was going wrong with Cyberpunk back then. I think I just kind of overlooked the fact that the driving also sucked. And also at one point in Cyberpunk, I was driving over a bridge and the whole bridge disappeared. So the feel of the driving was the least of that game's problems. So yeah, Forza Horizon, as much as I love it, I've kind of OD'd on it. So that's why I'm looking for a new drug in its new iteration. And also, it's a double-edged sword because every game's driving just feels so bad. I want Playground Games, who's the developer, to take like a core driving model and turn that into like a package that game developers can buy and they can just drop it into their games.
It's not a bad idea at all. License it all off like Unity or something like that.
Yeah, just the like basic parts of it, just to get that feel. Because I don't know, I can't go back and drive other racing games because of Forza Horizon 4. I've just come to expect something. Anyway,
this is how we get you to enjoy simulation races, Clinton.
I will not play motorsport, or maybe I will. I think one of the motorsports is on Game Pass, so maybe between now and November, I'll get a bit antsy and I'll just play that. The other thing I also wanted to mention is that we were talking about this, Brennan. I think Forza Horizon 4 has the best tutorial ever made in any video.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Like, so I played the crew games, which are sort of similar to Horizon, but not at all, because the crew tries to do other weird stuff like, oh, you can fly a plane and a boat and nobody really cares. But what Forza Horizon 4 does is just, I don't want to ruin it because it's something you have to kind of experience for yourself, but it is so well done that you will actually, every other tutorial is going to seem terrible after it.
It ruins driving and it ruins tutorials.
Yeah.
I was playing a game. I can't remember what it was. It was so forgettable. And the tutorial was like 10 minutes long and was mostly reading and moving very slowly. And I just exited out of the game. And then again, I don't want to ruin the tutorial of Forza Horizon 4, but I just want everyone to go play that tutorial. Because the tutorial is that first hit is free and then you're hooked.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are the games we're very excited about. 9 games either coming up or out already, and we'll have additions before the end of the year. And then we're going to be in 2022, and then that's going to be hectic. There's so many games coming out in 2022. But that's going to be it for this edition of the AfriCast. We'll have links to everything we discussed this week. And I'm going to sign off for myself, for Brennan.
Cheerio.
Robin.
Take care, everyone.
And for the entirety of Hypertext, we'll see you next week, everybody. See you then.
Goodbye.
Cheers.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.